Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christofferson. No Michael Brunts.
No. Am I talking loud enough? We're around a snowball, and I generally just don't speak loud enough, do I? I feel like I'm shouting, like I'm Will Ferrell's character in SNL.
The audio reading isn't that particularly high either, even if you're shouting.
It just feels like I'm busting people's eardrums right now. But.
If you're noticing some difference in audio quality, we have a little bit different setup today with Brunts gone. So bear with us, but should be fine. We have a pretty interesting list of things to talk about today with Nebraska football picking up a graduate transfer, with Nebraska basketball picking up commitments every 4 minutes. Nebraska baseball going 2-1 against Arizona State in their last home series this weekend against Michigan, which will determine their fate in the Big Ten tournament they're in, but what seed will they have, and could they potentially win the league? So we'll hit that late in the podcast. As always, we usually start with football, but first, Brian, what's new of you? What's been happening lately?
I've been looking at bubble hockey tables, maybe getting one for the basement, but they cost like $2,000 for some of those things. Hey. So I think it's a bit of a midlife crisis I'm going through.
You could have a garage sale and then use the proceeds to getting a bubble hockey table.
I'm talking, for those who aren't following, I'm talking like you used to go to Showbiz Pete. It was Showbiz in my day. I don't consider myself a millennial, as you know.
Yeah, we've had that discussion.
Now it's known as Chuck E. Cheese, but it was Showbiz, and they used to have that hockey game where it was USA versus Russia. Had the little scoreboard under the bubble and everything, and I loved it. And I think I'm going to make it happen now that I'm close to 40.
At what point in your day were you like, yeah, I need to look at these bubble hockey tables?
11 o'clock, and you saw I sent a text to Brunts, who is really a big supporter of me getting a bubble hockey table, so you can
kind
come
of the
over.
Driver of the whole
thing.
Yeah,
it's basically selfish motives by him. We can say that since he probably won't hear this, but that seems to be what it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that he would agree that he's largely looking out for himself in this bubble hockey table scheme that he's put together at this point.
But I think I found this guide for buying bubble hockey tables, and the guy read the first line. It says, "Welcome to the most complete bubble hockey guide on the internet," this guy wrote.
Yeah.
I just love that some guy is like throwing that in other people's face, you know. I'm getting choked up talking about it. It gets so emotional.
Well, I mean, if you're going to take the time to put together the most complete guide, you might as well advertise it right away in the first sentence of the guide. So people know that they're not at an incomplete guide. They're at the most complete one. But
how do you segue? How do you segue out of bubble hockey?
Well, I was going to actually segue right there. I was going to say this is the most complete Nebraska podcast that you're going to find in the market.
Ah.
So we're, we understand where that bubble hockey guy is at. We know what it's like to be the most complete at something, and we're going to continue to show it today as we get into a conversation about Nebraska graduate transfer wide receiver Canaway Noah, who joined the team on Sunday, on Mother's Day, after taking an official visit Thursday through Saturday. He was out here. Nebraska has been tracking graduate transfer wide receivers basically since January. This is the first one that I know of that they've hosted. They might have had people in quietly, but I don't believe that to be the case. This is a guy that I think they really honed in on. They really probably saw someone that fits what they want, fits culturally. You have the connection with him at Cal, Tony Tuioti, Nebraska's new defensive line coach, also at Cal, so there's a little bit of a crossover there, which actually leads me to a question. At what point do I have to stop referring to him as the new defensive line coach? Can he still be the new coach all the way into the season? Is that fair?
Through the first year, that's allowed.
Okay, but after that, it's over.
Yeah, second season, no way.
All right, I just need to know the rules on that, because I feel myself saying it every single time he comes up.
But no, I think especially since he's the only new guy, it works for a year.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad that we have hard and fast rules on that. But, Brian, when you saw the news, and it was kind of interesting how this came out, I mean, he basically put it on Instagram. A couple Cal blogs picked it up. Nobody around the Nebraska market had it for several hours. And then it all just came out sometime around 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday that lo and behold, Nebraska had picked up a wide receiver that has, you know, I think 1,200 career receiving yards, 6 touchdowns, had a 72 reception season, I believe, with 72 or 700 yards. Can't talk.
Yeah, 788.
In 2017. So this is a guy that's had some good production and really, in my opinion, helps fill a little bit of a hole in Nebraska's roster.
Yeah, well, let's just start with that number 788, which he had in 2017. I looked it up, and there's only 8 Husker players who have ever had that many yards in a season. So he's kind of in rarefied air as far as players who have come through this program. Spielman obviously has done it. But the thing I like is these feel like safe bets Nebraska is taking with the old transfer portal these days. I mean, Noah's a guy who's done it. It's on his resume. The success is on film. Darian Daniels has done it. And so you know kind of what you're getting. Sometimes, I mean, how many names are there? 3,000 names in the portal these days. And, you know, some of these guys haven't done a darn thing in their college careers. And it's just based off of hope and prayers that they're going to suddenly turn into something. Here, at least, you feel like, okay, you kind of know what you're getting because it's been done for a couple of years by each of these players.
Yeah, I'm going to be really fascinated how quickly he can put himself in position where Adrian Martinez kind of trusts him, can rely on him. You get the feel that when you watch highlights of this guy, when you talk to people about him, he's not going to necessarily take the top off of defense. He's not going to extend anything super long down the field, but he could be a really good possession guy on third down. He could be a guy that helps you move the chains. He'd be someone that sits underneath the defense and works against the middle of the field. I mean, I think that Stanley Morgan, for, you know, as many of the great catches as you can think of where he had the big bomb against Ohio State, where he came through in that regard, where he gets loose deep, he was really good at working the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. He was really good in those crossing route situations where he could catch it and run. He was good as a post receiver. So, I mean, if Noah can replace that kind of aspect of it in Stanley Morgan, and not necessarily the full production, I don't expect him to be a 1,000-yard receiver, but the big thing to me is, can Nebraska have a guy that steps up where Adrian Martinez is as comfortable with him as he was Stanley Morgan? I mean, that was his guy. Mm-hmm. Even J.D. Spielman took a little bit of a backseat to Stanley Morgan at times. When Nebraska needed a play, it felt like that's kind of the guy that they would go to more often than not. You think he had that big catch against Michigan State, against Ohio State. He had some catches in other games that were important. So you got to be able to replace that.
And the good thing is, I think Spielman can play any of the positions. Yeah. I think he knows them all. And so that really gives you some flexibility where, you know, if a new guy has a certain strength in the slot or wherever you want to put him, I think Spielman can work with that. You can find ways to use him all over the field. So J.D. Spielman and his experience helps this move because he knows so much and at this point should be able to do anything that's asked of him. So that's a big deal. And I like bridge players. I like guys who, and I'm not talking about the like old men sitting in a cafe playing bridge.
Yeah, I didn't know if you're going to go from that to cribbage to...
Yeah, yeah. We already got into bubble hockey and probably bored people, so I won't go into bridge talk. But I do like the guys who serve as a walking bridge for some of these young players. In this case, like Darian Chase, Damarian Houston, Jamie Nance. You'd still love to see them progress and if at least one of them get on the field, and heck, maybe they'll be stars this year. I don't know. Maybe one of them will be. But I think this takes a little heat off them in the fact that you feel like you've got a veteran guy who can take some snaps while they grow kind of naturally at their position.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you didn't want to bring it up, but now I'm kind of curious. Taking away poker, what would be your favorite card game?
You know, something embarrassing? I don't know how to play poker. Never played it in my life.
That is a sort of amazing fact.
Never played it in my life.
Well, I don't know if I think it's embarrassing.
It's a little bit, yeah. Well, amazing. It's a little bit. There's been a few cases where people have been like wanted to play, and I've just been like, I don't think so, you know, kind of.
Not for me.
I change the subject to something else, you know, yeah. Like.
So then, like, do you have any other card games that you actually not, you know, regularly, but that you enjoy? You played spades, hearts, any of that?
No, not at all.
Just out on cards entirely. Yeah, solitaire?
Pretty much. Can't shuffle the deck. I've just never I've never bothered. When people ask me to shuffle the deck, I just take like a stack and kind of place them together in different four or five times, and that's called shuffling.
That's amazing. You're just not a cards guy at all.
No. And I even have now a setup where it's sitting at a round table, which would be good, I think, for playing some poker.
Yeah. But, or blackjack.
Yeah, I know blackjack. Well, I do like blackjack.
All right. Well, that's we'll count that. We'll count that.
most elementary card game you can find.
Brian Christofferson here for blackjack. So let's one of the things we're going to do over the next, 9 weeks as we're leading up to Nebraska football coming back. We can go through some of the positions on the team. We might as well just stick with wide receiver. We've gotten into it a little bit. You look at that group. You mentioned you think Spielman can play any of the spots. How valuable is that if it allows Wandale Robinson to be able to get on the field at the same time?
Incredibly, and I fully expect if Wandale is healthy for him to have a really big role. I mean, I don't even think the coaches tried to hide that. They want him to have a big role during the spring. They kind of talked about it. And that's one thing I really love about this staff. They're not afraid to place expectations on a player. They don't, and I actually think that's good. I think it kind of challenges the player. Like, for instance, the way Scott Frost talks about Adrian Martinez and says, I think he can be the best quarterback that came through this program. I like that. I mean, it says this is the bar. We are not putting it down, you know, halfway off the ground. We're putting it way up here. Let's go hit it. And I think they'll do the same thing with Wandale Robinson. And I think a guy like that thrives off that. He's a guy who's used to big challenges and trying to meet them. And if you give him something minuscule, that's not going to excite him. He wants to go for everything.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've long kind of been the person who didn't want a whole lot of discussion about, you know, Wandale and Rondale Moore and all of that, because I thought it was unfair to the kid. But you look at how Nebraska handled Adrian Martinez and Maurice Washington, and as you say, it's fairly obvious. If they like someone, they don't dance around it. I mean, they talk about it. They talk about the player, his potential, what they see from him. And I think that is, as you say, a good thing, because it creates that sort of challenge. It creates, in Wandale Robinson's mind, like, I got to live up to these expectations. And that's not someone I think is overly worried about being motivated. But I do think that's good for Nebraska in general. And so you look at these other wide receivers, that's where you kind of need, you know, the Andre Hunts and Mike Williams and Jaron Woodyard and Javion McQuitty to kind of pick themselves up a little bit, because I don't think they had a particularly good spring if you listen to Troy Walters talk about it. Nobody was standing out in the spring game, so to speak. So if they're going to be involved in this thing, if they're going to join what I think is kind of a clear-cut group of the four above, in terms of you have J.D. Spielman, you have Wandale Robinson, Cade Warner, and then you add Kanaway Noah, you know, I'll be curious if Jaron Woodyard, who's had a nice spring in terms of the track, I thought he actually was the guy that was talked about maybe the most positively of the wide receivers. You know, who among that group do you think can emerge and be someone, not necessarily a huge factor, but a consistent player this fall?
I think Woodyard is probably where you start. There was a lot of Andre Hunt talk, but I think it is all based off the idea that he's still got 4 years, so he's kind of building slowly to it. It's now or never for Woodyard and Williams. I mean, either you're going to play or you're...
I think McQuitty, too.
Yeah, well, you're right. What I like is that I think it was 9 practices in, Troy Walters had that time up front in front of the media where he was just blunt as heck about the situation and said he had talked to guys that day and said, look, some of you guys have been here a while. You haven't done it yet. You got to do it now, because if you don't, we're going to have to move on. And he said, we're going to have to find a grad transfer. So piece it together. You get this Noah news last week. I think it tells you everything about the spring. I mean, maybe some guys made some steps, but I don't think enough did, or were consistent enough that they felt like we're good with what we got. And maybe if they had, they don't have to make this move, or they don't even think about it. But I think the Noah move shows you where they thought some of those guys were at. So I think it's been a little bit of a concern position for Nebraska. I also think it could be a position by late September where we're saying, why were we worried about it? If, like, Noah is really good and Spielman is being Spielman and Cade Warner's solid, you know, I think they can work with that.
Do we have, and I keep forgetting about them, and then I think about them, and then I remember I don't exactly know how they're going to use them. Do we have an indication as to what Miles Jones is going to do in 2019?
Well, I think he's going to be more of a in the receiver part first off. Beyond that, no, I don't know. I think I see him as sort of in that Wandale role, but someone's going to take the top spot there, and someone's going to probably have to sacrifice some reps. And I don't know exactly where Miles Jones fits in the equation. It's not like his name came up a ton from coaches during the spring, but I don't think he had a bad spring necessarily. Right. Like, I think his biggest thing has been health. Like, yeah. he just needs to consistently stay healthy, and there's a few of those guys you could go on the roster. I mean, JoJo Doman on defense has been one of those guys. Like, can we just see him healthy for a full year, and then you get a real idea of what he can be? I think the same thing with Miles Jones. So, I definitely don't sleep on him, though. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a little run in fall camp and puts himself in the mix.
All right. Well, when we come back, we are going to talk about Nebraska's just ridiculous run in basketball in terms of commitments. We'll try to remember all of the five people that they've basically added since the last podcast. Break down a little bit of what Nebraska's getting there and how quickly Fred Hoiberg has turned over the roster.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the sun.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
Well, Nebraska basketball has been extremely busy recently in terms of landing commitments. The Huskers have added five players since we last spoke. Last week, I believe, Wednesday. And so, Brian, I mean, we'll run through these real quickly. You have Shamil Stevenson, the Nevada transfer. You have Ivan Wadriogo, the nice French teenager. You have Kevin Cross, the Arkansas teenager. Derek Walker, a Tennessee transfer who likely has to sit out a year. And then, late yesterday, Samari Curtis,
Mr.
Basketball in Ohio. I think he's the one that people are maybe most impressed by in terms of the additions. But what do you make of how quickly Fred Hoiberg has turned things with Nebraska basketball?
Well, we've never seen anything like it. Some of it is necessity, but even so, if you had said a month ago they're going to have the roster basically all filled out, which they are right now, right? They're at their scholarship. They're one over their scholarships, yeah. But Roby would knock it to even if he goes to the NBA like we think he will. So to be in this position where you feel like, well, they got an actual team over there and they're going to put something on the floor that not only can they put five guys on the floor, which is nice, as opposed to only playing with three, I think that they could be competitive. Like, I mean, Fred Hoiberg has made a roster that they're all big too. Like, every guard he's got is like 6'4", 6'6", got a lot of 6'7" wing guys, and they all can shoot it a little bit. Like, even Kevin Cross, who's, you know, more, you think more of your power forward or whatever, 6'8" guy, bigger guy, he has a nice mid-range game and has worked hard on his three-point shot. So I think that's just part of the deal with Fred Hoiberg. You got to be able to shoot it some, or else you're not going to be picked up by him.
Yeah, the Kevin Cross thing is interesting because I spoke to him the day after his commitment, and I made the mistake of referring to him as a big man. And he very quickly said, no, I'm not a big man. I can play from outside, too. Mm. And so that kind of mentality, Nebraska's going to need him to be big in terms of rebounding and defending. But he very much views himself as a stretch four. He views himself as somebody who can shoot from, you know, anywhere on the court. And I think that that's what Hoiberg really wants to kind of cultivate. Now, you look at Derek Walker, who, again, barring some sort of waiver from the NCAA, likely to have to sit out a year. That's a guy from Tennessee that's very much a front court player that plays around the rim. He's a rim protector. He can go up and get rebounds. He's got a wide body. He can move people out of the way. And he can finish around the rim. I think his shooting percentage was in the 700s. I mean, because he didn't shoot that much. And when he did, it was in and close, and he made it. And those guys are valuable, too. I wish that he was immediately eligible for this upcoming season. Mm-hmm. It would make me actually feel a lot better about what they have assembled in terms of playing in the Big Ten, because I just think going in with Wadraogo and Cross as your two guys over 6'7" that actually are going to play in the paint is going to be pretty tough. I really think, you know, Avon, the French teenager, has a ton of upside, but it's going to be a pretty difficult transition for him initially. I mean, you're talking about a kid that's 17 years old, reclassifies to play into this you know, upcoming season. He was in the NBA draft until, you know, I think he decided he wasn't likely to be taken, and so he now chooses to come to Nebraska. There's a lot of excitement about him. I think it's going to take him a little while, but these guys that they pulled together, you got three front court players. You got somebody like Shamil Stevenson, who's 6'6", but could play as a stretch four if you needed. He's pretty interesting from Nevada. Again, a situation where, you know, you hope that he can get the waiver because he's got the opportunity to you know, I think help Nebraska right away. And with Eric Musselman going to Arkansas, there's just really some interesting guys. I know you said right away, Curtis, the one that stands out to you the most. Why is that?
Well, just his numbers. I mean, he averaged 34.5 points a game last season. I think he averaged more than 30 as a junior in high school, had more than 2,000 points in his career. And also, look who recruited him. Good coaches. Whatever you think of Mick Cronin at UCLA, he's an established coach who
won a lot of games.
Yeah, did it well at Cincinnati. And that's why he left Cincinnati. Cronin left on him, and so he wanted to explore his options. And before that, he had actually committed to Xavier, and Chris Mack was coaching there. And then he goes to Louisville. And Chris Mack, I think, is thought of as one of the better coaches in college basketball. So you're talking about a pretty good group of guys who are coaching who thought this guy is the real deal. You know, Mr. Basketball in the state of Ohio, had a bunch of 40-plus games last year. There's a lot of guys on that they've signed up who have put up big numbers. And I always go back to when I was a kid, I watched Alvin Mitchell at Omaha Burke play. I used to watch him all the time. And he was a stud, like, in Nebraska. And I thought, man, he's going to be an amazing D1 player, because I grew up watching him. And then he went to Nebraska. He was fine. He wasn't great. He went to Cincinnati or something after that. Had an okay college career, but it wasn't stellar. And that showed me, when I was a kid, like, how freaking good you got to be in high school to make a difference at this level, because Alvin Mitchell was a freaking stud at Burke. And I've never forgotten that. And so when sometimes I see some of these kids in the just kind of pedestrian numbers that are attached to them in high school, I'm like, how's that going to translate, you know, at the next level? Well, there's a bunch of guys on this group who they've got the numbers that just jump out at you, and you say, well, it's not a guarantee, but at least they've shown they can do it at the lower level.
Yeah, and I like how they've kind of assembled things. I mean, you don't have your traditional giant post player, but you've got a lot of options in the wing. You know, guys that are going to be eligible to play right away. You have Curtis, you have Green, you have Mack, you have, Cheatham.
Yep.
You have Kvass. You have all of these guys. Kakoa Rope, who never gets mentioned, but I'm very curious. I don't think he's going to be a great offensive player by any means, but I think he's someone that can help in terms of can get you rebounds, can play defense. He's a very good athlete. I'm going to be very curious, you know, what his career looks like under Hoiberg and potentially in this offense. So they've assembled a really interesting crew, and now it's just going to be how quickly can they come together? How quickly can they learn to play together? How quickly can they adjust every one of these guys to playing in a Power 5 conference when that starts to happen in you know, December?
Banton is an interesting kid, too.
Yeah.
From Western Kentucky. I mean,
there are two sit-out guys, I think, and Walker and Banton are pretty interesting players.
He was one of the top recruits, you know, a year or so ago. So we'll see how many of these guys. It's Banton, Stevenson, and Walker who aren't eligible.
Stevenson, I think, will get the waiver.
I would think so. And all of them can. Nowadays, you never know. Like, everybody can apply and you see what happens. Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it. So.
Which is just infuriating to me as someone who wants, you know, sort of some kind of semblance of rules as to why things work in regards to transfers.
It's just like the end of Animal House now where there's just chaos and you're like, what's his name? Kevin Bacon out there trying to stop it all.
All is well. Remain calm.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you think of me more as Kevin Bacon than Niedermeyer. So, whose own troops, you know, mutiny on him during Vietnam.
Who would have thought we would have worked our way to Animal House talk?
It's such a great movie.
Yeah.
It it really resonates in all sorts of ways even now. But you look at this roster, you look at how quickly they've kind of flipped this thing. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'd be shocked if you also weren't surprised by, I mean, what, 11 different people in 33 days? Like, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and not only that, but just the guys that they got to recommit. You know, Gervais Green's going to be huge to this whole thing. I mean, he was such a scorer at the junior college level, and I know he was across the state, so you think, well, that's a slam dunk, but that's a guy who had some options on the
Kansas table.
And for Hoiberg to go lock that down, we shouldn't lose sight of that. Like, keeping those guys intact, and that kind of gave him a floor to start building off of, where you felt some comfort right off the bat when you found out, okay, Green's sticking in this deal. They got at least some scorer out there. Now, what can they build? And it's just been amazing. Like, week after week, it's like, oh, this guy, you know, then there's two other guys you hear about, and it just hasn't stopped. And he's got a good group of coaches. You know, everybody knows about Coach A as being the recruiter he brought with him. But I think Armand Gates is a good recruiter too, and takes a lot of pride in that. So he's got some bulldogs that are going to go after it for him.
What it does is it makes me really curious. I mean, you have to flip the house, right? And so you gut everything, which essentially they did, and you start with the framework, and they put it all together. What happens now when you're looking at the 2020 class or 2021, and they actually get some time that they get to build some relationships, and they get to invest in it, and these kids are going to see what Nebraska basketball is supposed to look like? You're going to combine the great facilities of the PBA and the Hendricks with, you know, what I think is going to be a fun style to play with, combined with Matt Abdelmassih and Armand Gates and some of their ability to recruit. So, I mean, if you're excited now by how they've done this, I have to think you're going to be even more excited if they get it off the ground, because it seems like they have a really good system for how they want to put this together.
Yeah. And here's what's nice. You know, let's say they go like 14 and 17 in year one or something like that. You get this trial year to figure out, okay, of these new additions, who really works? You know, like who fits the bill, who doesn't? And then also they've done a pretty good job spreading out the classes.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's not just all like underclassmen in this deal. So it's not like a situation where you got to think like, okay, how do we get rid of this guy? I mean, I'm just speaking candidly. That's what it's become, right?
I mean, you don't have to dance around it.
I mean, that's the way it is. Like, this guy's not going to work. And what do? You've got some seniors and stuff where, you know, they can give you a good year. Or some juniors who will give you a couple years, and then, you know, you fill their spots in a year or so and move on. So I think that's a big part of it that shouldn't be lost, is the way they've kind of separated the classes, and they can work with that.
All right. Well, let's shift real quickly here for the last couple of minutes. Nebraska baseball went 2-1 against Arizona State over the weekend. Big two wins there. They're now back in most of the projections for the NCAA tournament, largely as a 3 seed, some places maybe as a 2. They've got 3 big games against Michigan this weekend. Brian, I know you'll be covering a few of them. I know you've covered the team a little bit this season. Do you have any expectations for this weekend at all?
Well, I wouldn't say expectations, but just like what needs to happen.
Yes.
I think they need to win 2. I don't think it's going to be easy by any standard. Michigan's pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's look at the standings here. Michigan's at the top. Nebraska is 2.5 out. So if they swept Michigan, they'd move ahead of Michigan. They'd have to sweep them. It's going to be tough to win it. Indiana is only a game ahead, but Indiana's playing Rutgers, I believe.
Yeah, and so they have an opportunity to stack some wins.
So I think Nebraska could wreck it for Michigan and maybe give Indiana a shot at it to win it if Indiana sweeps Rutgers. But I think Nebraska's playing for maybe second or third in the league. But all said, after the little swoon, I think there's a jolt like in their step over there right now, you know, because they got that series win over Arizona State. They were probably on the outside looking in. Now I think they're just hanging on, and I think they feel like, let's win a series, do well in Omaha, and we're going to be in this tournament.
Yeah, I think it's big that it's at home. I think it's big that it's coming off of that Arizona State success. Arizona State doesn't have great pitching, but, you know, Nebraska went out and they hit a little bit on Sunday. Alex Henwood and Jackson Hallmark came through, 2 guys in the bottom of your order. I think Nebraska has repeatedly run into situations where they just aren't getting enough hitting 1-9. I mean, you have a couple guys come through, and you need more than just Aaron Polinsky to win baseball games. You got to have other guys in your lineup, and so when Jackson Hallmark, you know, hits a big 3-run home run, that's a huge lift for that offense. When Reese Edens is able to survive through 2 rough innings in the first and the second, and turns it around, puts up, you know, 4 more scoreless innings, that's huge for that team. And so I think that they've got some confidence. I think they could really use a boost on Friday if they could just get Matt Waldron to pitch as he has. I said Friday. It's a Thursday through Saturday series, so they're actually playing in Thursday tonight. So Thursday through Saturday. If Waldron comes out and he pitches how he has early in the year, and not so much how he had the last couple weeks, you can win that Friday game. That's huge. I mean, I really think, I keep saying Friday, you win that first game, it's going to be big for him. So we'll see what they're able to put together. I expect them to win at least 1. I think they, because it's at home, have a good shot at winning 2. I think Erstad likes this team and was a little miffed at how things had gone early in May at Northwestern, at Iowa. He certainly felt good about that Arizona State win, but you gotta make it hold up. I mean, you go win those 2. If you go and drop 3 here to Michigan, you basically just piddled away any of the momentum you put together.
Yeah, pressure's on. I mean, it was as loud as it gets about baseball around here last week, and I think we've kind of been defense attorneys for Darren Erstad, and we won't get all into that. But I do think sometimes you gotta step back and say, this was a team that was picked lower in the Big Ten this year. It's a young team. They are in position still at this very moment going into this weekend to make this a successful season by all accounts as to how we thought going into the year. And sometimes you got to get away from it and go back to, what were you thinking 3 months or 4 months ago about this team? And if you had said, standing here the last weekend of the season, go win a series the final weekend, do well in Omaha, you're in the tournament, a lot of people would have said that was a pretty good year going into it.
Yeah.
So it's right there in front of them. You just got to do it now.
Yeah. Well, we'll know next week when we're doing this podcast, you know, where they're playing, who they're playing, I guess, in Omaha. They're in the Big Ten tournament for sure. We'll know, you know, where they put themselves in the Big Ten standings. So we'll have all of that to discuss next week. We'll see if Nebraska basketball adds another 9 people between now and the next podcast. We'll see if Nebraska football adds somebody. Maybe we'll talk some recruiting next week on the Husker 24/7 podcast. But as always, be sure to check out Husker247.com. Tons of great content. We'll have some good stuff from Brandon Huffman, Jackson Hanna, some other people this weekend. Hopefully we'll have a story on Ralph Brown talking about his recruitment from 1993.
Oh, wow.
And what happened there and all of the excitement surrounding that. And, you know, Brian, I'm sure you've got some things that you're working on.
No, I'm not going to do anything.
Okay, well, Brian's going to cover baseball, so he'll certainly be doing some things. But as always, you can check all of that out at Husker247.com.